Hello, and welcome to Healthy Bottom Line, a podcast by Chief Healthcare Executive. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. With Healthy Bottom Line, we look at the financial aspects of hospitals in the healthcare industry and how leaders can help their organizations succeed. Today, we talk with Rick Gundling of the Healthcare Financial Management Association about the year ahead for hospitals, economic headwinds, mergers, hopes for a recovery, and a whole lot more. It's a terrific conversation, so please join us. Thanks very much for joining us. We are talking today with Rick Gundling, the Senior Vice President for the Healthcare Financial Management Association. Rick, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me to have a chat with you today.
Excellent. Well, let's take a look at 2023. Hospitals and health systems seem to be showing some improvement, but is the recovery what you expected?
You know, we had such a fall from the COVID, from the pandemic several years ago. And we thought that the bounce back would be quicker than we've been seeing. It's kind of been a bumpy recovery. To your point, I mean, overall it's improving, but not for everybody. I think the stronger health systems have gotten stronger. I think the weaker health systems have gotten weaker. And so, but on average, it's been an improvement, but it's been, not even across the board. So I think we're still struggling with workforce shortages, supply chain issues, drug costs. I mean, all those issues that we saw during the pandemic are still there. I think health systems just, part of the reason we could get through the pandemic is we had a large infusion of money from the federal government through COVID aid, CARES Act, other places. Of thank goodness. I mean, and we needed it because they were asking us to forego elective surgeries and other types of procedures, right? But we still have a lot of those same issues, but not with the extra cash from it. So
A number of challenges you mentioned, like the labor. It seems like, at least I'm curious for your perspective, that I've talked to some hospital leaders said they're spending less on contract labor than maybe they had to a year, certainly 2 years ago, but still probably spending a little bit more than like it. Is the labor picture getting brighter, or the cost still a pretty significant challenges for hospitals?
Well, the costs are still significant, but I think the balance between contract workers and employed has stabilized and shifted back more to employed. I think doing so, that it required increasing salaries, adding flexible, different types of benefits in different kinds of work schedules and things like that, much more flexibility. But I think what one thing that we learned is, again, through the pandemic, because we're kind of operationalizing these, is you have to, hospitals and health systems, all healthcare providers and organizations, how to care for the caregivers, right? And so, and to make sure that their mental health, their work-life balance, because if they get burned out, they just leave the profession, right? And then we're struggling some more. So I think I think how to attract and retain talent has become much more a focus for these health systems than before, because the nurses and other clinical caregivers, they're physically not there unless we retain the ones we have. So
That seems like a real focus on the workplace, the wellness programs. It seems like hospitals are really realizing that they have to keep the good people they have because it's tough to find others out there.
absolutely. And it was one of those things, I think, in all employers, not just hospitals and health systems. I think caring for the mental well-being of our employees has become much more focused overall, right? And so because employees that don't have that balance or have mental health challenges or stresses in their life, call in sick more, they leave, they move, those types of things. They're not on the job when we need them to be. And so I think that that's just become a natural part of how employers have embraced it. And I think, again, not to keep going back to the COVID, I think talking about mental health and wellness has become much more acceptable. I think everybody, as we were all on lockdown and working from home for people that weren't used to it, and social distancing and not going out to eat and be, and seeing friends, except on Zoom calls, all challenged, all were challenged with the stress and the depression of those times. So I think it was kind of a shared experience for so many of us. So we're all more willing to talk about it and to address it.
Which is so important because we've heard so often, especially in healthcare, clinicians, doctors, nurses have been reluctant to seek help because they're worried about either letting down teammates, letting down the organizations, or even worse, getting professional blowback for coming forward with a mental health struggle. And it's
Absolutely.
encouraging to see that hospitals are really starting to send the message out there that if you need help, please get it.
Right. And and caregivers are the last ones to seek care themselves, right? So
Well, I guess it's crystal ball time. What do you expect to see in 2024 for hospitals and their financial picture? I know Fitch Ratings and the S&P Global Ratings have had said the next year expects to be another challenging one for a lot of systems. What do you see?
I agree. I think there's, and I don't want to be doom and gloom, because anytime you have conversations about the healthcare system and the challenges and things like that, it does sound doom and gloom, but it's not. It's when I talk to HFMA members, they all are still very positive about the future and their ability to navigate. And no one's just throwing up their hands and saying, I give up, right? And that's a good thing, right? Because we all need management and leadership to take us through. But I think as we're rebounding, and we're slowly rebounding, I think we're going to see some trends, particularly in 2024. Well, first, I should probably, start off with, it's going to be an election year. There's going to be a lot of talk, probably in the negative, about healthcare prices, access, those types of things. Again, it's going to be mostly talk. I don't think anybody's going to on the campaign trail is going to have solutions or put forward. So I think it's just going to be a lot of finger pointing and scapegoating about that. I don't think anybody's going to have any creative ideas at this point in time. But I do think health systems should probably be ready to talk to the media and talk to their communities about how they are caring for the community, what the good things that they're doing as part of their social determinants of health support, their community benefit support. Talk about some of their ways that they're helping patients navigate their financial obligations and their insurance coverage and good patient communications. There's those types of things. I think it's good to put a positive light on the work that the health systems themselves are doing, because I think it's just easy to scapegoat some of the broader health sector issues that we have. Now, I do think that we're going to continue to see mergers and acquisitions, consolidation across the board, probably in big ways. I think a lot of our, again, the challenges that we just talked about financial stresses, high supply costs, challenging labor costs, actually causes a look and a challenge for standalone hospitals, rural hospitals, those ones that are struggling financially, right? So they will seek partners to merge with. So I think, as we talk about integrated care and different types of payment models that reward clinically integrated networks, I think sometimes those larger mergers and integration strategies are going to come to light. On the flip side, I think the Federal Trade Commission, the is going to look suspiciously at them. We recently saw, well, on the health insurance side, Cigna was talking with Humana. Now, we always thought that would be challenged by the FTC. I believe the Cigna shareholders kind of pushed back on the deal, but That would have been a challenge, period. But again, as the health system providers consolidate and merge, the health insurers will do it as well. So we will see these, these kind of big deals moving around as well. We certainly have seen, CVS and Aetna and over the past few years. So, hospitals will, react to that. So I think, that's one of the things. If we thought that that was going away, I don't believe so. The other thing I think we'll see is certainly digital transformation and artificial intelligence. I think, again, because these consolidations do lead to significant technical advantages to bring their IT systems together. I think we'll see AI mature in the use in healthcare. So, there's lots of concern about the use of AI. There's probably really good uses certainly around administrative simplification efforts and prior authorizations and all those kinds of aggravating points that we have in our health systems that maybe AI could help alleviate. And on the caregiver side, certainly with the copious medical records we have, that's certainly a tool that can look through very quickly for our physician or nurse to just pick out the salient points right away, instead of looking through pages and pages and pages of notes, is to maybe highlight, hey, this is the reoccurring theme for this patient to focus on first. So I think we'll see that. Ron, you and I just talked about the workforce challenges. I think that's going to continue into 2024. And then I think also some outsourcing and offshoring, will be looked at. Particularly administrative tasks. We'll always be looking at the cost benefit analysis that we'll be seeing. So, and I think certainly in the election year, I think that the areas around affordability and the empowered consumer is going to be a big takeaway. That we talk right now about transparency, but it's like, how will transparency move the market into affordability, or will it? So a lot of consumers, transparency is just one part of the tool. What is the price? And then is it affordable price is the next question, right? And so, and what affordable could, means different things to different people. So I think that that's some of the bigger issues through 2024 that we'll probably be seeing. I think because the election cycle is going to have a lot of spin about it. So I'm in Washington, D.C., so, I know how that works. So.
Yes, indeed. I think they're going to dominate a lot of the conversation. I wanted to get back to what you're talking about M&A, because you mentioned
Yes.
some of the factors, frankly, being financial necessity being a big driver. Do you think there's going to be a relatively modest bump in M&A activity on the hospital and healthcare side, or do you think you might see a pretty significant increase in mergers and acquisitions?
Well, I think we'll see an increase, but it won't be just with health system to health system. I think they'll be partner with some, what a lot of folks call non-traditional industry innovators. So, telecom, retail, telehealth. I think some of the tech giants as well. I mean, I think we see some of the partnering with Google and Microsoft and other types of things around data analytics to kind of really harness the use of data into informations and actions. So.
You mentioned some of those non-traditional players. I mean, obviously, Walmart, Amazon have made big steps this year, among others. Expect to see some of these other non-traditional rivals engaging more aggressively in the healthcare market.
I do. I think, the employer community, and they've said it for years about, the co high cost and affordability. And they're going to start making steps into how can they implement and do that. And I think, Walmart, since you just brought that up, was one that says, hey, primary care, maybe we can step into that and have, just, a menu of options that we provide. And we're in a lot of places, so maybe bring some primary care to the masses in an affordable way. Now, the challenge is that also creates a lot of different access points for patients too. And to bring that integrated care, instead of having all this disparate records around, how do we bring all that information together so somebody's primary care or other types of providers know what care was given at Walmart, right? Versus these one-off kind of places. That's always going to be a challenge. And so that's where integration and bringing, clinically integrated networks has a benefit to it. So.
What do you think might be an unexpected headwind for our hospitals that maybe hasn't gotten much attention yet in the coming year?
Well, certainly this is probably not in the coming year, but through the next few years, is there's definitely much more concern and talk about entitlement programs. And I just know that, certainly every year the Medicare trustees put out a, the trust fund will be solvent until, 2028 and things like that. This year, I noticed that there was much more talk about it, and much more concern that it be, and partially because Congress is not in a position to make some of those hard choice actions, right? Do we raise Medicare taxes? Do we cut entitlements? Is there anybody in office right now that is willing to take on those? Would we have bipartisan support to make some of those tough issues? Because it's looming. So I think it's like it's certainly, the solvency has been talked about for years, but I think it's people are much more skeptical about policymakers' ability to impact it, right? And are we going to wait too long to make some of those changes? I don't see those changes happening in 2024 in an election year, but it's certainly one that we're going to have to address. And I think the ones that people aren't talking about are some of the ones that we're looking at now. Is I think some of the and use the drug benefits, I think, and the prices around drugs. I think Mark Cuban's cost plus drug certainly has caused discussion and a microscope over drug pricing that we've certainly dealt with for forever. They have a solution to it. Maybe it's not a one size fits all solution, but a solution. And then now we see CVS saying, hey, we're going to change our drug prices to be more similar to that as well. So you start seeing this movement of some of the what they would call a disruptor. Partially it's I think the Mark Cuban plus drug company saw an opportunity, right? They saw a space that they could insert themselves. And then, CVS responded. And I thought that was a big change. So.
I'm wondering about hospital construction because a lot of hospitals, health systems, have had to put some projects on the back burner during the pandemic. Do you think hospitals and some health systems are going to be moving ahead with construction and improvement projects they've had to defer by necessity for the last couple of years?
Absolutely. I think in probably looking at it, not just redoing the space they already have, but much more flexible spaces that can change based on, technology. The things that we do in an outpatient setting has just changed dramatically. And so, I think the care, maybe the mix of clinical space to patient rooms, all like that will be built much more flexibly. But even though we, talk about the construction and is there a need for all that construction? Because so much has shifted to outpatient physician practice offices and things like that, our population is still aging, and it's still growing. So even if we stop, those hospitals would quickly get to capacity, just from the natural the demographic changes of age and ability and treatment plans and those types of things, even if we shift more patients to telehealth and other kinds of care settings. So.
You mentioned earlier something interesting about hospitals and healthcare probably getting more scrutiny in an election year and needing to talk about some of the good they're doing. A lot of health systems and hospitals have been really expanding their health equity efforts over the last couple of
Yes,
years. Do you
right.
think that's going to continue in the next year or so? Maybe even take on some different facets.
Absolutely. I think the role of and the line between health systems and public health, has started to blur, where hospitals are looking to be, are we a convener of this? Are we a participant? Like, what is our role in this? Because of, certainly the emergency room becomes the point when people get sick, finally, from some of the deficiencies in the community itself, maybe lack of adequate housing, lack of, good food sources, reliable food sources, education, what I mean? There's all types of things that are respond, just the community itself, the ability to have social interactions and things like that is, isolated people tend to get sicker. And we were talking about mental health before. So I think, they have mental health challenges that lead to alcoholism and drug use that and they end up in the emergency room. And so, but so a lot of hospitals have looked at, how do I impact the community more? And what is my role in that? Am I, I run a great emergency room, but am I the best one to provide groceries for people? And maybe so it's also a way, do I partner with others? Do maybe I partner with the Chamber of Commerce to help bring in a grocery store to a community? Or, if that's not going to happen, is there a way to do a food pharmacy to make sure that people have fresh vegetables and things like that? And I think it's also just how to make sure that they get the care they need in the right setting before they end up in the emergency at the, the highest cost place, period. So I think that has changed quite a bit. I think, certainly as we talk about value-based care, and I think in 2024 we'll see more health systems, looking again at value-based care. Medicare is certainly looking at value-based care opportunities within a renewed effort. I think since the Affordable Care Act was passed, we hadn't seen a lot of successful models, right? Partially out of design of the programs, they weren't designed correctly. But I think there's still a commitment and belief that, that we should be paying for keeping people healthy. And I think that that's, a good thing to do. Finding out the right payment model is the challenge in the business model to do that. So,
Well, before we wrap up, just was curious to
yeah.
get your thoughts on what health system leaders, healthcare leaders should be thinking about. We've talked about a lot of the big issues they're going to face. But what are some things they should be doing to give themselves the best chance for success this year?
Stay nimble, right? As we talked about all the challenges, there's so many opportunities as well. I think in the health equity space, right? I think partially being able to address your community health needs in the right place. Be seen as a leader for keeping people healthy, besides just taking care of their illness, I think is very empowering. And just helps in the community support as well. I think there's just, Gen Zs and millennials and things like that, they want, they want health systems and corporations to be much more involved in their communities in a more philanthropic way. I mean, health systems are already doing it, but I think it's just making sure people know you're doing it. I think sometimes we don't ring our health systems don't ring their bell enough about what they're doing right. So own your story. Own your
Yeah,
story.
exactly. It's one thing to do some great things, but you have to tell the public about some of the things.
Exactly. So
Well, hey, this time flew.
oh, my goodness.
Rick, thanks so much for taking some time to talk with us today. I really appreciate your insights. Enjoyed the conversation.
Oh, thank you for inviting me to talk with you. Thank you. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Healthy Bottom Line, a podcast by Chief Healthcare Executive. You can subscribe to Healthy Bottom Line wherever you get your podcasts. For latest news and analysis, visit chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X, the platform formerly known as Twitter. For Chief Healthcare Executive, I'm Ron Southwick. Take care.